And welcome back to another edition of the On The Board Sports Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Thomas, a.k.a. Shawnee on the mic. Hope everyone had a great weekend. As always, joined by my main man, my co-host, William Cerucci, a.k.a. Will C. Will, hope you had a good weekend. Happy Monday, pal. But Will, before you introduce yourself, I have one question to ask you, pal.
It's not Wednesday, so it's not the camel on hump day.
It's not the camel hump day, no. Now that the world is opening up a little bit more, and now that you're back to work, does every day still feel like a Sunday?
Hell fucking yeah. Hell fucking yeah, every day feels like a Sunday at this point. Man. It's not during the hours of 7 to 2 or 7 to 3:30, however you want to put it. But yes, every day does feel like a Sunday at this point in time.
Well, man, how are you doing, bro?
Hanging in, can't complain. I'm sure you see my face right now. This is going to be an audio file for those people that are listening in. My face is red. For those people that don't know, I'm working on East Side Access right now, just going out and trying to make New York a better place for what it is right now. Just going out there and trying to build it, make some history happen, and yeah, you know, try and make a dollar at the end of the day, you know. But I may be tired, but I have the energy to come on to the show and talk some sports with you guys. So it's always a blast having you guys on. How long has it been since it's been me and you?
It's been a while. It's been a very long time. So
it's been a while. Let's get right into it, Sean. Lead us away.
Let's get right into it. And Will, I definitely want your take on this. As we saw over the weekend, star safety for the New York Jets, number 33, Jamal and Adams, traded to, out of all places, the Seattle Seahawks. Nobody saw that coming. He was traded for not one, not two, but three picks. Two first-round picks, 2021, 2022, also a third-rounder in 2022, and also a player, Bradley McDougal, is also. So the Jets got a 4-for-2 deal. Obviously, Jamal and Adams, he goes over there, and the Jets also give up, I think it's a 2022 fourth-rounder.
Fourth-rounder, yes.
So, well, the Jets got a haul. People love the deal. There's some people that hate the deal. As the resident Jet fan on this show, the floor is yours. What's your take, though?
First and foremost, man, good luck to Jamal going over to Seattle. You know, he spent his 3 years here, and he made the best out of the situation here. Yes, people keep on talking about the 16-32 record. Yes, people keep on mentioning about the Jet defense total defense overall being almost dead last just about in the 2 years. Not dead last, but just about in the bottom tier of total defense in that category. Have they gotten better? Yes, but let's just put things into perspective here for a second. Okay, 2016, the year prior to everything happening, that Jets secondary was horrible. They went out and they drafted Jamal. I bring up that they were horrible and their offense was also horrible that year too. They could have drafted Mahomes and Deshaun Watson, but I went off on a rant on that yesterday. It's on my Instagram page. Stop bringing up, you know, what if they could have drafted Patrick Mahomes. Who knows if he could have changed the franchise around. But whatever. That's besides the point. When that secondary in 2016 had an aging Darrelle Revis, who was a shell of himself at that point in time, Marcus Gilchrist, Buster Skrine being that other corner, and, of course, who could ever forget about Calvin Pryor going out there and manning that strong safety position. We all know how well that ended up, and I hate using the term bust, but Calvin Pryor was a bust. And then they go out, they get younger, they drafted Jamal Adams. It helped out. They went out and they drafted Marcus May. It helped out. We were talking about how this secondary could be one of the best in the league after what they did in that draft. And then the next thing you know, flash forward 3 years later, this guy made it to two Pro Bowls in 3 years, one of the top safeties in the game. He gets traded for three draft picks, like you alluded to, Sean, and Mr. McDougal, who has more interceptions than him in his career, more tackles, played in a great secondary up there. Just the defense couldn't do anything up in Seattle these last couple of years after guys like Richard Sherman and Cam Chancellor and Earl Thomas Jr. go by. So now you get back Jamal Adams. He's one of the hardest-hitting safeties in the league. Good for him. He's going to a winner. He wanted to be in Seattle. That was part of his preferred trade lists to go to on his list of trades where he wanted to go to, excuse me. And, you know, listen, the bottom line here is this. Yes, he didn't get along with Adam Gase. That's fine. People want to talk about Adam Gase. I'll be the first one to admit I've been posting up shit since, you know, with Adam Gase. But the main thing here is, the team didn't give up during that horrible, horrible stretch in which they went 0-4, and they could have went even worse after losing out against the Dolphins and the Bengals. But yet, here we are talking about how Greg Williams is this great defensive coordinator, how Adam Gase, yes, he has the offense, and I wanted Adam Gase here. Sean, you know that. And for anybody listening that listens to this show daily, I wanted Adam Gase here, being that offensive coordinator, being that offensive first guy that the Jets haven't had in 20 years. Has it worked so far? Not really. You look at Sam Darnold, what's going on with him? Of course, we're going to see a big progression with him coming into year three, I feel like. But again, with Jamal Adams, to get back to him, this guy trashed Adam Gase. This guy trashed Joe Douglas. This guy trashed the Jets organization. And he trashed the Jet fan for bringing them through the mud. Think about this from 2 years, right? From a 2 year span. And even from, I don't want to mention about what happened 8 years ago with butt fumble and Geno Smith getting knocked in the jaw and everything like that. Or even Ryan Fitzpatrick going from Fitzmagic to Fitztragic. Okay. Let's go from the 2 years that he went from Todd Bowles, right? He goes over to Adam Gase. And then Sam Darnold comes in. He has the mono. He goes in, misses the first 4 weeks. Okay, the Jets go 0-3. Trevor Siemian goes out. Luke Falk comes in. People forget about that. Everything's placed on Le'Veon Bell. All eyes are on Le'Veon Bell, shutting down. Jets go 0-3, 0-4 to start the season. They wind up losing to the Jacksonville Jaguars, the Dolphins, and even the Cincinnati Bengals, in which I alluded to earlier. And yet they still found a way to win 7 games. They still found a way to go out and win 7 games, albeit it was an easy schedule. But you know what? This guy put the team and threw them under the bus. You got leaders coming out like Le'Veon Bell. You haven't heard anything from C.J. Mosley. You haven't heard really anything from Sam Darnold. And the main thing here is, and I'll leave this short and sweet here, you know, why trash everybody? You wanted your money. You're going to get your money in Seattle. It's not going to be now, but it'll be down the road. Team still has 2 years under contract with him under his rookie deal, so they'll build around, place him. You know, you trash Joe Douglas, who won in Philadelphia. You trash Adam Gase, the head coach. You trash Woody Johnson with what's going on with him, with his whole comments, with what he said throughout the Trump, you know, him being the ambassador to the UK. And not only that, but, you know, with the Jets, like I said, these past 2 years have been absolutely unbelievable. Oh, by the way, one other thing. Since the Jets got back 2 first-round draft picks for him, what do these other 2 players have in common? John Abraham and, of course, Darrelle Revis. What do those 2 players have in common, Sean, with Jamal Adams?
Well, I think I'm cheating a little bit because I read your post. That did the Jets only get 1 first-rounder for Revis?
That's right. They got 1 first-rounder for John Abraham. That wound up turning into Nick Mangold. We all have great Nick Mangold.
Hall of Famer, baby.
One of my favorite offensive linemen ever, outside of DeBrickshaw and Kevin Mawai. And Darrelle Revis, we all know that Darrelle Revis wound up getting back, you know, Sheldon Richardson with that number 13 overall pick. We all know what happened with the other guy that got drafted 4 picks earlier in D. Milner.
Right.
Yeah, good God is right. You know, whatever the case is, they still got a first rounder back for a Darrelle Revis that was hurt, that tore his ACL up that year in 2012 against the Dolphins in week 4 that season. So you get a first rounder for a guy that basically didn't play at all and he wanted a new contract at that point in time. Similar situations to what Jamal Adams went through, but Jamal Adams is still under his rookie deal. Darrelle Revis was going into year 5, going into year 6 in 2013. Nobody knew if he was going to go back into the same player that he was at that point in time. We know what happened with him in Tampa Bay. Then he goes over to New England. We know what happened with him in New England. He won Super Bowl there. I don't even want to talk about that. And then, you know, he comes back over to the Jets, signs that crazy multi-year deal, only plays 2 years out of that, I believe five, on that contract. But, and we all know about Sheldon Richardson. Sheldon Richardson was a hustler here. He was trying to earn his playing time here. Goes over to Seattle. Didn't work out in Seattle. And, you know, Jamal, good luck to you in, you know, Seattle. Let's just see what happens there. Just don't trash the franchise. Trader Joe got his two first rounders, so I'm pretty happy. I'm pretty stoked. This is going to be a rebuild, but this guy, I believe, knows what he's doing right now, and he's going to tool everything around Sam. So that's the end of my plan.
So what the trade is, I look at it from two parts. Part one, Will, is I agree with the consensus. The Jets got a haul. The Jets got two first-round picks, a second-round pick, and a player. And Bradley McDougal is not a scrub. Like, he could actually play. Is he the best safety? No. But is he the worst? No. And Greg Williams is going to find a way to fit him in. And, well, on top of that, I think Joe Douglas knew this could be a possibility. So he drafted a possible Jamal Adams replacement Ashton Davis, who is such an athletic player. And in college, he was the kick returner. Well, you don't see safeties being the punt and kick returner for right. their team. That's how much of a freak Ashton Davis is. And he's going to be asked to play strong safety, not free, because as long as Marcus May is there, Marcus May is going to play. So I think the Jets got a hole, and I think it's up now to Joe Douglas. Well, the Jets are out of the next two drafts, the first two rounds of the next two drafts, the Jets are going to have a total of six picks. Joe Douglas will, like you said, he can continue to build that offensive line, build that wall in front of Sam. He can continue to add guys on the outside for Sam. If Le'Veon Bell doesn't work out, he could draft a hot back coming out of a school to replace Bell, so on and so forth. Or on the defensive side, he could continue to replace guys. Well, I still think cornerback is a position of need for the Jets. So let's see how this season goes in 2021. Draft a hot corner or two. Because, well, now you have the ammo that if the Jets want to trade into the top 10 for the next two drafts, they can. Because they have the ammo to do it. Good.
I was going to say, I don't think Joe Douglas is that guy that's going to trade up draft picks unless he really wants a certain player that he has his eyes on. And not only that, but, you know, we got to see it in the draft this year, right? Denzel Mims winds up falling down to number 58 overall. The Jets wound up trading down to 58 after, you know, just an unbelievable deal with, I think it was the Seahawks at that point in time too, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
During that trade. So, again, Seahawks always come back with the Jets somehow, you know. But anyway, just to go back to it, you know, you alluded to it with the draft. This team right now in place has the quarterback position locked down easily, hands down. Now they're going to have two first-rounders in the next 2 years straight. That's pretty unbelievable right there. This is reminding me of not only what happened in 2006, but remember in 2000, they had four first-round draft picks. They wound up getting John Abraham, Sean Ellis, Chad Pennington, Anthony Becht. Those four were the cornerstones for those Jets teams from the early 2000s going into the middle 2000s. And those Jets teams were no joke. You know, yes, people rag on Chad Pennington. Yes, people talk about John Abraham in such a highlight. And I don't mean that sarcastically at all, because Abraham was one of the better top pass rushers during that time. And the Jets haven't had a pass rusher since John Abraham at that point in time. But make no mistake about it, the Jets are built up for the future. People keep on talking about, people don't know about Sam that well. This guy, I'm telling you right now, Sean, we're going to save this for our NFL preview, but I'm going to say right now, Sam Darnold is going to have a monster year this year. Put that in the book.
Hot take right there. Before we move on from football, Will, the second part of this trade is Jamal Adams goes to a stacked Seattle team. And Seattle always finds gems. They always find guys like their first and second round picks are always bad, but 3 through 7, Will, they draft amazing. I don't know what it is about it. So I think maybe that's why they said, you know what, look, we could care less about the first and second round because we always get it wrong. But 3 through 7, I think they get it right. But I don't think Jamal Adams is the missing piece to beat a San Fran, to beat a Green Bay, to beat a potential Tampa Bay or the Saints or Philly or the Cowboys. I think he's going to help. I think he's really going to help. But Seattle's issue has been pass rush, which he's also going to help because he's probably the best blitzing safety in the league. Like, I think we could say that, Will. So I think he's going to help there. But it's going to be very interesting to see now. Well, like you said, not only is he the missing piece, but now Seattle has to find money for him. They just paid Russell Wilson. That first year of the contract goes into effect this year. They got to find money to pay these backs and pay the defensive ends. Jadeveon Clowney is still not signed.
Just about to say him.
So people are saying, well, maybe this is the end of Clowney, which will – I don't know if you saw this before we started the show.
No.
Bradley McDougal said he just got off the phone with former Seahawks teammate Jadeveon Clowney. And Jadeveon Clowney told Bradley McDougal to tell Joe Douglas when he arrives for training camp, come get me. The Jets have close to $22 million in cap space, Will. I'm just saying. Greg Williams, if you give Jadeveon Clowney to Greg Williams to go along with the other pieces the Jets have, that's a good look. I still think he ends up back in Seattle on a one-year deal or with Tennessee because Vrabel was his former coach. Mm-hmm. But it won't shock me at all if the Jets ended up getting him. But that's going to be very interesting to see Jamal in a Seattle Seahawks uniform in a tough division because, Will, I don't think Jamal and Adams realize how good he had it. Brady is out of the division. Ryan Fitzpatrick is the quarterback of the Dolphins. The Dolphins don't scare you throwing the ball. And I know the Bills just got Stephon Diggs, but Josh Allen still isn't a premier passer in the league. From a passing standpoint, Jamal Adams had it good. Because, Will, let's talk about the NFC West real quick.
Yeah, go ahead.
And, friend, you have to expect Jimmy G is going to improve as a passer in his second full year of starting. Well, now his third, because the first year he got hurt. His third full year. So he's going to be improved. Jared Goff, even though Brandon Cooks isn't there, the Rams are still a pass-first team, especially with Todd Gurley being gone. They still got Robert Woods and Cooper Kupp, so on and so forth, to know they're going to pass the ball. And, oh, by the way, I think we all forget, DeAndre Hopkins is a Cardinal now. So to go with DeAndre Hopkins and Larry Fitzgerald and Christian Kirk, the Cardinals are going to air raid the ball, obviously. Jamal Adams is going to have it tough, especially when the Seahawks don't have a pass rush. I hope he knows what he's in for.
Don't forget about the Rams either. Even though people want to sleep on Jared Goff here, even though he was a first overall pick, you look at their defense, too, in place. They wound up trading 2 first-rounders for Jalen Ramsey, and they still have Aaron Donald and such. And, you know, their receiving core, it's still good to a degree.
Yeah.
And they still have Jared Goff, even though the jury is still out on him at this point in time. But listen, make no mistake about this. The Seahawks are a Super Bowl contender right now because of the fact that, A, their defense, if they could go out and – they still have Bobby Wagner. They still can go out there and re-sign Jadeveon Clowney. But everything hinges around Russell Wilson. And if Russell Wilson, if he can stay healthy, that's the main thing. Because year in and year out, this guy goes out there and puts up video game-like numbers with video game-like plays to get those numbers. If this guy gets injured, and I'm not wishing him at all to get injured at all or anything like that, but God forbid, if he does get injured this year and next year, you're looking at a top 10 overall pick for the Seattle Seahawks that just gave up, you know, a first rounder and another first rounder for Jamal. And we all know what's going to happen there. Oh, by the way, both these teams play week 14.
Week 14, I wish it was in New York, but it's in Seattle. But I wish it was in New York. So we shall see. That will be December around there. So we shall see. Well, let's transition from the football field to the diamond. Baseball opening weekend has concluded. Each team has played 3 games so far. Well, we'll talk about the baseball landscape after we talk about the Yankees and the Mets. But let's talk about the 2 teams from New York right now. I'll start, Will. I'll talk about the Mets. Mets open at home, 3 against the Braves. They won opening day 1-0. Cespedes with the home run, the only run of the game. Edwin Diaz with the save. Saturday, they come back in a position to win again. They're up 2-1. Diaz blows the save, and then the Mets blow the game. Well, we'll talk about this when we talk about the landscape of of the league minus the 2 teams. But I'll say this now. This runner on second rule in the 10th has to go. Not because it hurt the Mets, but I've seen it in other ways. That's a terrible rule. But we'll get to that later on, Will. So the Mets lost 5-3 on Saturday, and then last night they got destroyed on Sunday night. Baseball 14-1. Rick Porcello, who was a hometown kid, grew up a Mets fan. His debut was not good. He was out after the third. Like I said, the Mets lost 14-1. So this beginning of the season 1-2. They're in Boston tonight. Boston also lost 2 out of 3 to Baltimore. But like we know, it's the opening weekend. So, 1-2. I'm trying not to overreact, Will, but you have to understand where me and Mets fans are coming from. It's a 60-game season. Well, the Mets could be out of it by next weekend. That's how serious this is. And Steven Matz is not a number two. He pitched like a number two a Saturday. Saturday, he pitched very well. But he's not a number two. If Matz was healthy, if the Mets had their regular starting 5, Matz would be number 4. He's not asked to be number 2 because it would have been DeGrom, Syndergaard, and Stroman, and then him. Rick Porcello was not a number 3, but he's been thrusted into that role. So I'm not going to jump over the bridge just yet after 3 games. The offense still looks really bad. But it's only 3 games. But in terms of a competitive standpoint, well, it's going to get late early, as they say.
Okay, Yogi.
Yes, it's going to get late and early, Will. So I'm not panicking just yet, but we shall see. Will, before we get to the team in the Bronx, what's your take on the New York Mets?
My take on the Metropolitans is this. It's only 3 games, people, okay? I know people want to just jump off a bridge. And, you know, I've seen on Twitter, they can't hit. They can't do this. They can't do that. They got to rely on Jacob DeGrom. Bro, it's a 60-game season. Anything can happen. We got to see the Marlins go out and win 2 out of 3 against the Phillies. Nobody gave the Marlins a chance to go out there and basically win 2 out of 3 against the Phillies, even though right now we'll get into what happened with them in a little bit. But you look at the Mets right now and you just say to yourself, you know, these games were close the 2 games were close with the exception of their one blowout loss last night. And you really have to just say to yourself, okay, that's gone. As a Met player, that game is over. We're playing up in Boston tonight. It's going to be fun. We're going to go out there and we're going to play hard. You know, that's all you can do. You can't dwell on a 14-1 loss, even though it's against the arch rival in the Atlanta Braves. And, of course, Marcelo Ozuna is a Met killer. Make no mistake about that. But, you know, you have to just wash everything away at that point in time. And the one thing I believe in Luis Rojas is the fact that he knows his players because of the fact that he coached 8 of them in the minor leagues. So that just goes to show me that he knows the mental breakdown and the mental preparation of these players since they were younger at that point in time. And number 2, you know, when you're looking at it, you still have Jacob DeGrom. You can go out there and twirl, you know, 5 innings, 6 innings. And this is what really surprised
me. Opening day, Will, and not to cut you off, Will. Yeah. Opening day, he looked fantastic.
He did.
Looked like he's on his way to Cy Young a number three. I know it's just the first start, but he looked fantastic.
No, he did look fantastic. Make no mistake about it. And that was the difference between, you know, to go back to Thursday with him and DeGrom, him and Garrett Cole. DeGrom's comfortable as a man. Garrett Cole has to go through the phases of everything going on. We know all about the great stuff that Cole has, but he got ahead in the count. He was anxious. He looked good, but he was anxious out there, and he wanted to get that start over and done with. You could see it. But the bottom line here is with the Mets, getting back to the Mets here, make no mistake about it. You know, this team still has a deep lineup. The DH is going to help them out immensely. We got to see that with Cespedes hitting a home run on Friday night. You know, and that, and there was another thing, too, that they brought up. They swing at a lot of pitches. Boog Xiambi brought this up last night in the ESPN telecast. And by the way, take off Chipper Jones.
Oh, yes. Oh, my God. Yes.
Bad. Interrupting Sutcliffe every time, interrupting Xiambi all the time.
And his voice is not for TV. It just isn't.
I don't mind watching Chipper Jones on YouTube and learning baseball from it and how to play and getting to see things from his perspective. But from a TV perspective, just watching it, it's not good chemistry.
It's not. It's definitely not.
But to get back to the Mets, it's only three games in. Keep the faith. 60 games. Anything's possible. Who knows what might happen? They might catch on fire. Look what happened in 2015. They thought that they were out of it back in the middle of July. And then they wound up going hot and winning the NL East. They wound up going out there beating the Dodgers and then the Cubs. And they lost the Royals eventually. And even last year, too. But same thing. They went hot in July. Schedule, you know, you can look at the schedule with them. Bottom line is, Mets, don't sleep on them.
All right, well, with that being said, the upcoming schedule for the Mets are in Boston for three games tonight, tomorrow, and Wednesday, and then they go to Atlanta, who they just saw, for a four-game set Friday through Monday. Well, I actually miss those four-game sets that start on a Friday that it ends the week and it begins the next week. We're so used to seeing the four-game sets go Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, or Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Nice to see a Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday four-game set. That's what the Mets have. So at Boston and at Atlanta for the Mets. Well, let's go from Flushing, Queens to the Bronx. And let's talk about those Bronx Bombers. Well, the Yankees began the season, not just their season, the MLB season in Washington against the Nats with a very impressive rain-shortened win against the World Series defending champion, the Nationals. Well, Gerrit Cole, well, like you said, he looked like he wanted to get the start over with. He looked a little uneasy. He gave up the home run. After that, he was on cruise control. Like, he really, really was. And then the game got called when it started to rain. But, well, I felt he pitched well. Well, Aaron Judge looked amazing. He drove in two of the four runs. He looked really well. And the other two runs were driven in by Giancarlo Stanton, who hit an absolute moonshot off Max Scherzer, 458 feet. Well, that ball is still in the air, as they say. Saturday, James Paxton, well, not so good, but he's coming off the surgery, the injury with the back. So he didn't pitch well. Yankees did not play well, and they lost. And yesterday, down 2-0 for the whole game, Glaber, bam, 2-1. Luke Voit, bam, 2-2. And then they take the lead and they win the game 3-2. So the Yankees take 3 out of 2. And they were supposed to be in Philly.
2 out of 3.
Two out of three, Will. Well, the Yankees were supposed to be in Philly tonight, but we'll get into why they're not playing tonight. Will, before we get into that, what's your take on your New York Yankees over the weekend?
This is what happened in October with them. And, you know, they wound up catching fire against a team in which they have great starting rotation in the Nationals. Their bullpen just absolutely collapsed for Washington. Make no mistake about that. Again, the Yankees, you got to go out there and look at it like this. They're a home run hitting team. They will always be a home run hitting team. They'll never be a team that'll hit for contact at all. They'll always be looking for a fastball, and pitchers can go out there and try and basically throw their best breaking stuff or their best off-speed stuff. And more than likely, because of history and the way how history has, you know, been for the Yankees these past couple of seasons, they cannot hit, you know, they can't hit the curveball, or they can't hit the, you know, the changeup for the life of them. But if they could go out there and just watch what's going on and take an eye and, you know, take a pitch here and there, you're going to win games like that. That's how the Yankees won on Sunday. And you got to see that. They wound up going in deep into that bullpen. They wound up going out there taking care of Will Harris, a former Houston Astro. They went out there and they took care of Sean Doolittle to a degree. So we got to see that. But make no mistake about it, the National starting rotation is a force to be reckoned with in not only the NL East or in that Eastern bracket now for this 2020 season, but in all of baseball. Because the fact that, A, even though Steven Strasburg didn't play the other night, even though Juan Soto didn't play the other night, they're still the champs for a reason. Max Scherzer went out, pitched great. Patrick Corbin went out and pitched great. He pitched a gem. Make no mistake about it. The bottom line here is with the Yankees, and this is what's going to hurt them too. I'm telling you, this is what's going to hurt them too. The Yankees relying on their bullpen a little bit too much, because we're seeing this right now in all of baseball since it's a 60-game season. You're getting to see guys now come out and get taken out after three innings of just basically, you know, going out there and not playing the best baseball out there possible. You're getting to see pitchers go out three innings, four innings, throwing 60 pitches, and that's it. You're relying on the pen. You know, you're not going to see guys go complete games anymore. It's going to be a rarity. You're seeing it now, and it's been happening like this for years, especially in a 60-game season. Watch out for the Yankees with their bullpen. I'm telling you, this is going to be an absolute disaster waiting to happen in a 60-game season for them if they keep on relying on their bullpen too much, because that is what killed them in the postseason last season against Houston. And even though they're hitting, you know, they're hitting – wasn't that good. You add both those things together, it's going to spell for disaster for this team. That's why I have them winning the wild card this season. But again, you know, we'll see what happens.
Well, sometimes, as we know, the best deals are the ones you don't make. And a lot of people forget last off season, everybody thought the Yankees had Patrick Corbin in the bag. Right. But he wanted that extra year, and then Brian Cashman said no, and he went – to Washington, and, you know, he's pitched well. You know, we all know that he can pitch and really, really well. Right. Well, if the Yankees sign Patrick Corbin, they probably don't have Gerrit Cole. For the simple fact that the Yankees are not the old Yankees, really, to spend. You could tell the Steinbrenners and Brian Cashman, they're trying to spend when they need to, not because they want to. Gerrit Cole was a need, because several – Reno, he's been hurt. And Will, what is going on with Domingo Germán?
I haven't paid attention to this since everything that happened with him, right, during last season. He's been under the radar for me at this point in time. I don't know. You could say the same thing about James Paxton with what's going on with him the past couple of weeks, even though he had surgery on his back. A lot of people are going out there and shitting on him, even though, like I said, he had an injury and he's trying to pitch in a game for sure, but there's a lot of things going on there. Who else is there? Seve, Paxton's hurt, Tanaka, concussion, you know, not Chance Adams, who's the other guy? That Clark Schmidt had a great inter-squad series as well. You know, you guys see what happens with these kids. But the bottom line here is with the Yankees right now, and sometimes I get tired of listening to John Boy and everything that's going on over there, because it just gets so repetitive and even with the, I don't want to say, you know, Randazzo. Randazzo's doing a great job with the sports show, your guy. But, you know, it just gets repetitive after a while hearing the same stuff over and over and over again. And as a Yankee fan, being a realist, I see the problems already that are right here, you know, You could talk about the 2-3, winning two out of the three games, and, you know, with everything going on and with everything that's been said with this team, it's just too much. Too much with the Yankees and everything like that. That just gets to me at that point in time. Follow what I'm saying?
I do follow what you're saying. Well, I think the managers are thinking is spring training happened, and then before the season started, COVID hit crazy, and then it got shut down.
Yeah.
Well, these pitchers haven't had strenuous pitching in months. So I think these managers are saying to themselves, we can use the bullpen because they've had extra rest, which is true. But, Will, I agree with you, especially for the Yankees' sake. Well, the Yankees are going to hit.
I'm not worried about them
hitting. Right. Especially if guys don't get hurt, which, I mean, listen, guys are going to get hurt. Guys get hurt all the time. But the Yankees hit last year, and Judge missed a big portion of the year. Stanton pretty much missed the whole year, and the Yankees still hit. With that being said, they do have to, and I agree with you, Aaron Boone has to trust the starters. Paxton had to go. He did not look good. But when Garrett Cole is on the mound, Garrett Cole has earned the right to go 6 innings, 7 innings, even 8. Even if he's given up 2-3 runs, if the pitch count is not crazy, he's Garrett freaking Cole. You're paying the guy almost $400 million.
And not only that, but let's look at it like this. You alluded to Aaron Judge. You had 30 guys on the IL last year, and guys stepped up in a big way.
Right.
That were really unknowns. Nobody knew these guys. Nobody knew Mike Ford. Nobody knew Mike Tauchman going into the season. Following minor league baseball, pretty cool, and that's fine. That's fine, but nobody knew about these guys. And now that they're known, you're going to see the scouting reports on these guys go absolutely hard. And they're not going to hit the same way that they did. It's a known fact. It's a known fact when that happens, that when a player gets scouted out on, they come right back down to earth, and they have to make the adjustments not only at the plate but in the field. So we'll see what happens there. You know, Sean, I don't know what's going to happen during these next couple of weeks with COVID going on and everything. But I do know this, with this Yankee team right now, you know, yes, the sky's the limit. Sky's the limit. Well, the ceiling's the limit right here in this house. But, you know, with everything that's going on, I don't know. I really don't know with these Yankees.
And, Will, it's only been 3 games.
That's
Yankee
right.
Fans. Yankee fans, leave Gary Sanchez alone.
What happened?
I'm already seeing it on Twitter.
I'm seeing it too.
It's just like, yes, I know his defensive capabilities are not there yet. Well, Gary Sanchez is still a baby. He's still young. He's still a baby in terms of the game. So calm down. So, Will, we shall see. The Yankees schedule, they have the Phillies for 3 and then the Red Sox for the weekend at home. But, Will, and this will lead us into our landscape of the league, 14 members of the Miami Marlins tested positive for COVID. Marlins just played the Phillies. MLB doing the smart thing, canceling the Yankees-Phillies game because they did the testing and they're waiting on the results to come out tomorrow. And they also canceled some other games because teams traveling and being exposed, so on and so forth. So, well, before I get into the questions, I wanted to ask you about the landscape of the league. What's your take on this Miami Marlin stuff and the Yankees game being postponed?
Listen, you're looking for the safety of these players right now. If, like we said, we talked about this earlier on in the course of the year with this whole COVID-19 pandemic, don't play. Don't play. Yeah, I know this. At the end of the day, Major League Baseball doesn't care about its fans. We know that. Instead, they care about their pocketbook. And you're seeing it right now with everything going on, right? You can't have fans in the stands. But yeah, players want prorated salary. They want their full salary, which I'm for. I'm for them wanting to have their full salary because their CBA is coming up in 2021. However, with everything going on, they've added from 10 to 16 teams. Now you're going to generate TV revenue from here on out. And because of that, they have to go out there and do whatever it is they have to do in order to make that money for the owners. So that way the owners can go out there and say, oh, I'm not losing money because of this, even though they are somewhat. Now, with everything, you got college sports canceled. You have minor league sports canceled. You have Little League canceled at this point in time. What are we doing? What are we doing? It makes you think about this daily, each and every single day. This is a business. It's not about pro sports. It's not about fandom anymore. This is about money. It's about trying to get money into the owner's pockets. It's about trying to get people to survive, everything like that, with the players, you know, with their guaranteed contracts and such. The bottom line here is with sports right now, it's a business. That's it. Case closed.
Case closed on that one there, Will. So, and hopefully all 14 of those members. And, Will, tomorrow's a big day for the sport. Because if multiple players.
Right. Sorry to cut you off.
No, good.
But to add to your fact, with everything going on with the Miami Marlins, I don't know what they were doing in Philadelphia over the weekend. And Major League Baseball knew about this at this point in time. Why? If Major League Baseball knew about this and swept it under the rug, shame on them. Shame on Rob Manfred again. Again. I've ripped on this guy. You know it. It's getting crazy seeing all this right now, seeing everything that's happened over the course of 2 weeks to 2 months. You drag the fans through with all this labor negotiation shit and only to come out with a 60-game season, which they agreed to. Why do that? Why not just make 60 games at that point in time? And now this, and we talked about this earlier. It was only bound to happen at this point in time. Why go on with it? Why? I don't understand it. I don't. And you swept it under the rug too? If you knew about it prior? Come on, man. That's very true.
Well, let's circle around the league really, really quick and just give you some things that I saw, that you saw. Well, the first quick hitter I have is the Los Angeles Dodgers look. As advertised, even though it was only four games, they looked as advertised. What's your thoughts on the Dodgers?
Dodgers are the best team, even though they went up against the San Francisco Giants. Look, they're the best team in the West right now. Make no mistake about it. Even though San Diego, they started off a little hot. The Dodgers, they're the best team. You're getting to see Mookie Betts. He signed a new deal. We didn't talk about that. He signed a new deal. Clayton Kershaw, no Clayton Kershaw. He's on the IL. Walker Buehler looked good. You had the kid May look good the other night. There's a lot of things that are going on over in L.A., and they could go out there and score runs with the best of them. And especially now with no fans in attendance, you know, all eyes are basically set on that TV screen or phone or computer or wherever you're watching your games. But the bottom line here is Dodgers are the best team in the NL West.
Well, that leads me to my next point, pal. What's your take on the no fans and the stands? I'm kind of used to it now, and I think the cardboard cutouts and the dogs have to go. But Thursday and Friday was weird. I'm like, okay, there's no noise. I know they're trying to, like, manufacture noise, and they got save crowd noise, but what's your take on no fans in the stands? Have you gotten used to it yet?
I don't mind it. I've gotten used to it, seeing no fans in the stands. You know, bottom line here is with everything going on, it's like watching batting practice, but with games. And if you really think about it, if you really look at it, if you play softball or if you play baseball in front of nobody and nobody's watching with the exception of the parents, now you're going to have millions of fans watching at home. You're seeing the TV ratings jump up. I'm used to it at this point in time, seeing no fans in the stands right now. I know that's very odd to say, but I'm watching some of the highlights from the NBA and from the NHL, you know, not seeing any fans in the stands at this point in time. Make no mistake about it, Sean. I don't mind it. I don't mind it at all. I don't mind the cutouts. It's fun. The point is you got to have fun through this. Are we going to see the Yankees do this when baseball comes back to New York, if and when this whole COVID shit, you know, stops? With everything going on, you know, just because of it, I don't think so. I don't think the Yankees did do that. I know the Mets are trying to have fun like always, but they're also trying to generate profit because of what happened, not only through this whole situation, but throughout throughout their whole history. So over the course of the past 10 years with the Ponzi scheme and stuff. So they're trying to make some money back. And, you know, like I said, I'm used to it. I don't mind it. It's something different, but we all have to embrace the different to get to now and trying to get to the better reality that is tomorrow. So you got to embrace the present.
Well, from what you've seen so far through the opening weekend of Major League Baseball, anything that surprised you, any hot takes, anything that you've seen so far in the opening week that made you raise an eyebrow, Bo?
Just this the runner on second stuff. I know it's a little different. I know you want to get into that, Sean, but realistically, like, you know, the Orioles taking 2 out of 3 against the Red Sox, even though the Red Sox aren't the same team that they were at one point in time, the Marlins taking 2 out of 3, really shocking right there from that perspective. No team started off perfect and no team went winless throughout the first 3 games. So that right there is actually pretty good. And, you know, make no mistake, man, this is going to be an interesting, interesting time to go out in there. You know, I'm going to bring up some of the things right now. I just want to just get to it and then we'll go from it from there. Let's go to standings. Cleveland 2-1, Detroit 2-1, Minnesota 2-1. Nobody's shocked about Minnesota, but Cleveland and Detroit a little bit throughout the first 3 games. It's 3 games. Oakland's 3-1, a little bit shocked there, but they're money ball. They always go out there and play hard and find a way to win games. So that's definitely a plus. LA, my team coming out of the AL West, 1-3. Again, still early. We'll see what happens there. Texas, how about this? Corey Kluber, done for the year. That's it. They traded for him,
right?
There was another guy, Justin Verlander, another guy, done. That's it. That's a huge blow for them.
There was a report saying that he was out for the season. Now they're saying it's like 2 weeks. So we have to see. But, well, karma always comes back to bite you. It always does.
I agree. You know, Pittsburgh, no surprise. With Pittsburgh starting off 1-2. Arizona, 1-2, somewhat. The Dodgers are 2-2. Kind of shocking there in a sense, even though we talked about them being still the best team in the NL, in the NL West. They'll find a way. Colorado, we talked with Jenny Kavnar of AT&T Sportsnet from Denver and how, you know, their pitching staff is vastly underrated. It is, especially with Bud Black there being the pitching coach and the pitching guru that he is. So really nothing really surprises me outside of the fact of Miami, Detroit, and Baltimore. That's it. And obviously the stupid rule changes. Sean, what's your take?
Well, before I get to my little rant about the runner on second, I know last year it was fun seeing the Yankees and the Twins both break the records for team home runs in a year. The Twins, I think, over the weekend hit like 7 or something. I mean, well, like all they do is just hit bombs. Like, it's just crazy how that team. Nelson Cruz hit 2 yesterday. Max Garver, I think, hit 1 on opening day and then another one on Saturday. I mean, the Twins, wow. Well, if they could just get any pitching, the Twins, wow, can win it all if they get any pitching because they're a
I think they have the pitching there in place with Rich Hill and there was another guy there too, along with Barrios. I got to bring Barrios, this back right. with their roster, but they're right there, and nobody talks about them that much, Sean, just because of the fact that, yes, their lineup is actually pretty good, but
very good.
They're one of the best in the league, make no mistake about it. Top 3 for sure in baseball, but to get back to them, as I bring up the I want to bring up their roster for a second. I'm probably not going to get it. Whatever. They go out. They add Rich Hill. Forgot the other guy that they had in place. There were a couple of guys. Yeah. Jake Odorizzi. You know, Pretty solid starting staff right there.
Right.
But make no mistake about it, there's a lot of things going on with the Twins, and the Twins, they could go out there and play with the best of them. And I think if they could go out and really shock a lot of people. Make no mistake.
Well, they definitely can. So that was the one thing I said, my God, 7-1 a weekend is crazy. So they did that there. Well, two teams that I'm excited to watch this year, and they both got off to exciting starts, Toronto and the White Sox. Especially Toronto on opening day beating Tampa Bay. That was a thing to see. And everybody talks about Bo Bichette and obviously Vlad Guerrero Jr. Don't sleep on Kevin Biggio. Biggio is stronger than his dad because Craig was known for contact and spraying the ball around the field. He was never known for power. Kevin has bulked up. He's strong. And I don't think he's going to be a 30-40 home run guy, but he could easily be a 20-30 home run guy. So I'll watch out for that, Will. But yes, Will, before we move on to the NHL, this runner on second business, it didn't cost the Mets because every team has to play by the rules. But I forgot which pitcher said it. It might have been Trevor Bauer, who is always
outspoken.
He's outspoken, right? But somebody said, and well, it's a good point. In extra innings, do you know how hard it is to get a runner to second base?
It's true.
And it's very, very true. And he also said, there's no fans in the stands. What's the rush? That's also a very excellent point. There's listen, once the two teams leave the field, the lights go off, bro. That's it. So yeah. It's like, I'm not a fan. I can see if they did it in the 12th inning. But in the 10th, like at least play the 10th and the 11th, and then they'll be like, all right, we're not trying to be here all night. Runner on second, top 12, and we go from there. So I'm not a fan of that. We saw it happen with the Mets. Run on second and the 10th. The Braves scored, and then they tacked on two more runs. Not a fan of it, especially in this shortened season, because what's the rush, Will? And I think you're going to get teams with a good bullpen, Will, cheated. Well, not cheated, but they're going to lose some games because they don't get to use that bullpen in the 10th, 11th, 12th because they got to sort the runner on second, Will. And, Will, anytime a runner is on second, a bloop is going to bring them in. A hit down the left field line or the right field line is going to bring them in. A hit in the gap is going to bring them in. There's so many ways for a right. Offering a bunt, right. There's so many ways for a runner to score from second base. So I'm not a fan of that, Will. So, well, we shall see what happens this week in the MLB.
I just want to get back to the Twins here for a second. Their rotation right now, Barrios, Hill, Kenta Maeda, and Homer Bailey.
Kenta Maeda.
Okay.
That was a
solid
guy, right?
Four right there. Taylor Rogers is your closer. Still got Tyler Duffy, Trevor May, Tyler Clippard, veteran. Sergio Romo, veteran. Randy Dobnak, veteran. He's been with them for at least a couple of years now. Yeah, that's pretty crazy right there. And, you know, their lineup is obviously deep. Marlon Gonzalez, Sano, Alex Avila with Mitch Garver being there. You know, you could go out and talk about Josh Donaldson being there. I didn't realize Josh Donaldson signed with the Twins this offseason.
Yep, he did.
Jorge Polanco, good shortstop. Eddie Rosario. Byron Buxton, Max Kepler,
Nelson Cruz
play right. You know, it's crazy. And Nelson Cruz.
Well, if the Twins are smart, they move Max Garver from catcher immediately because Joe Mauer, he retired at 32, 33. They moved him to first way too late. Don't make the same mistake with Max because Max can certainly. He's becoming a star, and he's a very powerful guy. So we shall see what happens in the MLB in this week. Well, last but not least, it's finally here. The NHL is back. We're Islanders fans. The Eastern Conference, they're in Toronto. The Western Conference, they're in Edmonton. Well, something just hit me to combine baseball and hockey. And I want your take on this before we talk about the NHL. The country of Toronto doesn't want the Blue Jays playing home games because they don't want teams flying in from the U.S. because of the COVID risk. I understand they're in Toronto, they have a bubble. But you have seven Eastern Conference teams coming into Toronto. Yes, right? I know they're going to be bubbled and quarantined and all of that. But to me, if you're a country or if you're the city, specifically Toronto, you can't allow one thing and not allow the other thing. To me,
I don't get it.
You got to shut down everything. What's your
thoughts? I don't get it. I really don't get it. My thoughts are this. Why do you – and you got to look at it like this too, right? There are plenty of hotels out in – up in Toronto. You know, you're going to have, what, two – you're going to have at least, what, 24 – 12 teams going out there and playing in Toronto at that point in time. You mean to tell me that you can't find – you can't put these players in the opposing team at the Sky Dome, in which has hotel rooms? Like, give me a break. You know what I mean? That's
right.
Ridiculous. That's BS.
So now they got to play in Buffalo.
But not only that, too, but like, let's say if, but from this perspective, let's say if they do go out and play, right? If they were to go out there and play in Toronto, what's stopping these players from going out and, you know, even though outside of the $750,000 fine for the Blue Jays, what else is there for the opposing team to go out and do something or wait outside an arena or hang out with somebody that plays hockey that might be their best friends that might be doing that? So I get that aspect of it. And there's lots to do in Toronto. I get that. I understand that. In Toronto, hockey, it's a hockey city first and foremost. So, of course, they're going to go out there and take it. But I don't get it. I really don't. I don't get why they can't have the Blue Jays and have the NHL team there, too. It just doesn't make any sense.
Somebody on Twitter tried to explain it to me, and I'm like, sir, I understand, but you're not answering the question. But that's a story for another day. Well, the Islanders, they've arrived in Toronto. They had their first practice today. Well, before we get to their scrimmage, quote-unquote, Wednesday against the team from Manhattan, and game one on Saturday against and game one on Saturday against the Florida Panthers. Well, the roster came out before they left, and a couple of your favorite guys, Oliver Wahlstrom and Kiefer Bellows, not on the roster.
Not surprised.
What's your not take, Bill?
My take on this is this. You got to go out there. You got to have the experience. I'm all for Tom Kunackle playing on that third line, and I'm being dead serious right now. I'm all for Tom Kunackle going out and playing on that third line right now. He's been getting the reps. He has the Stanley Cup playoff experience. He has the rings to go out there and back it up. And, you know, he played well against the Penguins last season. Make no mistake about that. Andrew Ladd has been working his way back. He's been kicking ass. Can he skate? Can he go out there and do it? Hey, you can't doubt a champion, right? You can't doubt the heart of a champion. Andrew Ladd is that, winning with the Blackhawks, winning with the Hurricanes, being the captain of the Winnipeg Jets prior to him coming over as an Islander at that point in time. I'm not surprised with Michael Dalcol trying to go out there and find his way. A lot of people talk about his skating ability. It's like, eh. You got to let this guy grow. You got to let this guy grow. You got to see what he's got. And, hey, with everything that's gone on, think about it like this. Game one happens on Saturday, right? Games two and three happen back-to-back on Tuesday and Wednesday, both noon games. So you're going to see a lot of – you're going to see a mix-up of goalies here if it's 2-0. You're going to see – or if it's 1-1 for that matter – you're going to see a couple – you're going to see maybe one or two guys that are going to get scratched. I'm not surprised with everything that's gone on. But Barry Trotz and Lou Amarillo want to go out there and make the best team possible. And to go out there and do it, you got to go out there with your vets. Plain and simple. You're not going to see any young kids go out there and play. Wahlstrom, Bellows, if it were a different situation where guys were hurt, they'd be up. No problem. No problem at all whatsoever. But because of the special situation, because of the fact that Lou and Barry like to play their vets, make no mistake about it, I'm not surprised by this at all, not one bit. Barry is a defensive-minded coach first. This offensive juggernaut known as the Florida Panthers are going to come out firing. They say defense wins. Let's find out Saturday.
And I love the fact that they're playing the Rangers as the warm-up game, scrimmage, whatever you want to call it, because the Rangers have firepower of their own, right, with Mika Zibanejad and the player that wanted to come here but didn't decide. I'm not going to say his name. Will, you know who. Yes, right. So, but I think that's a good thing there. But, Will, outside of Islanders Panthers, is there a series or is there a storyline that you're excited about, pal?
First and foremost, man, you know, I know as an Islander fan, and I know people are going to rag on me for this, but I kind of want to see that Blue Jackets Maple Leaf series. That's going to be really interesting seeing.
Because of your boy. Because of your boy.
Well, that and the fact that Tortorella is a good defensive-minded head coach. We got to see what Elvis Merzankins has done. And not only that, but you got really – they lost out on Bobrovsky. They lost out on Duchesne. They lost out on Panarin. And yet they're right there – they were right there in the thick of things before the quarantine happened. I'm also looking forward to what the Rangers and the Hurricanes are going to do. You're looking at a great offensive team. And the Rangers going up against the Hurricanes, which are and who are a defensive-minded team first. And we get to see Igor Shesterkin go out there, maybe start. Who knows? Might be King Henrik at that point in time. But if it's Lundqvist, great. If not, the Rangers can't practically lose this series, right? But, again, we've seen some crazy stuff. Jets and the Flames going at it. The Canadiens and the Penguins are also going up against each other. The Blackhawks and the Oilers, that's going to be a great matchup, seeing an original six team going up against the face of the NHL right now and Connor McDavid, make no mistake about that. You know, the Flyers and the Bruins playing. And that's another thing that we didn't mention either. You know, the top four teams, they don't have byes. They're going up against each other in round robins. So that's going to make up a lot what's going on here. So it's going to be fun. Everybody's on an equal playing field for sure. The Blues and the Avalanche, to get back the Blues and the Avalanche, that's going to be a great series. The Wild and Canucks, to a degree. The Canucks, I know Al Murdoch is really big on his Canucks, obviously, because he's the public address announcer for them. Shout out to him. He came on our show a couple months ago during this whole thing. Coyotes and the Predators, their GM, the Coyotes Coyotes GM got, he walked. Let's see what happens there. The Predators, we know that they're a great defensive team. They're very physical. The Capitals and the Lightning, man, that's also going to be fun seeing that as well. And one other series to note.
Golden Knights and the Stars.
Yes. Watch out for that.
That's the one that I'm looking forward to the most. Well, Vegas is like a third home. Like, Brooklyn is my first home. Miami is my second home. I love Las Vegas and everything about the place. So I feel like I like root for the Miami teams and I root for the Vegas teams because I just love going to those spots. Well, but yeah, I think Stars and Vegas is going to be lights out. Obviously, Islanders, Panthers, hopefully, fingers crossed, Islanders can repeat their success of what happened a couple years ago. Before your boy decided to depart us and go home and wear his pajamas and all that stuff,
you know,
and all that jazz.
we had on Nick Alberga, you know, for an episode talking about Maple Leafs and talking about Canadian hockey, everything like that for sure. But can you imagine if they lose, or can you imagine if the Islanders lose, how much of a troll job either one of those fan bases?
Oh, yep, yep.
And, you know, Nick. He jokes around.
In Toronto, too, right.
he jokes around. He's just poking at the Islander fan for sure, but he's just kidding around with us. So don't take it seriously. You know, at the end of the day, he's just trying to do his job.
Well, before we end the hockey part of the show, let's not forget one of these teams that will be eliminated before the playoff starts or, you know, afterwards. One of these teams is going to get the first pick in the NHL draft because the NHL lottery did not go according to plan. Everybody thought that the Red Wings were going to get it. The Red Wings are not even picking in the top three. They're picking number four. So, well, we could have a situation where, yes, the New York Rangers could get the first pick, and they have the Hurricanes. So they got two chances.
Pretty shady.
Right, they got two chances of getting the first pick, and yikes, we don't want that at all, pal.
Remind me of the fact that, number one, You also got to look at it like this, too. I don't want to see that kid playing with Crosby.
And oh, yes. Yes.
Like, you don't want to see that. That's number one. It's bound to happen. And number two, with what's going on with the Canadiens right now, they could have had a chance to sign Sebastian Aho. They offered him a mega amount of money. He wound up signing that qualifying offer to the Hurricanes to re-sign over there. So if they could go out, and there might be a little stuff going out there, but imagine if the Islanders were to lose in this qualifying round, right? And I'm just being optimistic right now. I'm throwing it out in the universe. If they could go out there, after what happened with JT, after what happened with Artemi Panarin, and they get this number one overall draft pick, and you talk about the dynasty trying to come back with Belmont being on the horizon. My God.
That would be a very good consolation prize if they don't win
against the Florida Panthers in the first round. Hell, even the Panthers might get that first round.
The Panthers could get it too, right? You never know.
With the offensive talent they have, but
right.
God, if the Islanders get that first draft pick, I mean, it's a win. Either way you look at it, it's a win-win for the franchise if they get the number one overall pick. If they don't, we got to see what happens. You know,
we have to see what happens. I think, is it the top two or top three picks still have to be picked, right? Or is it the top two?
It's number one has to be figured out. I think number two was the Kings.
Was it the Kings? Yes, you're right. It was the Kings.
Number three, Kings. I think, was Ottawa.
Ottawa and then
Detroit. And Detroit, then Ottawa, correct.
Ottawa again.
Because of right. The whole Eric Karlsson deal.
Eric Karlsson, yeah. With San Jose, right.
That trade over.
Right.
From San Jose to Ottawa right. Getting picked. So we'll see.
What a season for San Jose to be bad.
What a season for all California teams to be bad.
Right. to not have a California team in the playoffs is crazy.
First time since 1995-96 that hasn't happened.
That's crazy, bro. So crazy. Well, we've talked about football. We talked about baseball. We talked about hockey. Well, any final thoughts on this episode, pal?
No final thoughts. We haven't talked basketball. Let's not talk basketball. Games haven't counted yet. There's a lot of storylines that are going to go on. Everybody's going to want to talk about LeBron. Everybody's going to want to talk about BLM and stuff. But the bottom line here is, you know, basketball, you're hearing all these stories and everything like that, how some players are leaving the bubble. One went to a strip club in Lou Williams. We'll see what happens as time goes on. Who knows? We might not. Best case scenario, you see all three sports go to their championships and play. Worst case scenario, sports is canceled and that's it. So with no cure in sight yet.
So my final thoughts are, I have two. First one, happy birthday to Tennessee Titans starting quarterback Ryan Tannehill, who we've signed for 4 years and for big bucks. So happy birthday to him. Also on the Titans front, they signed Derrick Henry. And Will, we've had on Steve Weitz from the NFL Network, friend of the show. Yeah. We had on Jim Trotter of NFL Network, friend of the show. Mm-hmm. And, Will, we spoke to them about running backs being paid and not being paid. It was good to see a running back being paid.
Absolutely. No mistake.
And, Will, and he's such a big back. He takes a lot of hits. He gives a lot of hits. But he's what every team needs.
Let's talk about this, too, since, you know, guys getting paid. How about Patrick Mahomes being the first half-billion-dollar athlete?
I'm going to get to him in one second. Well, Derrick Henry took a four-year, $50 million deal. Yes, we don't know how the salary cap is going to look next season, 5 years from now. He said regardless of the situation, he would have took less money because he knows the team has other needs. He also took less money so we could pursue Jadeveon Clowney this year. Well, Derrick Henry is not only a great player, he's a great teammate. That's what every team needs. Well, like you said, Patrick Mahomes, almost half, damn near half a billion. half of Billy in the back with a B, right? Bidding with a B. Well, he's worth every penny, and they structured the contract right. He's pretty much going to make between 40 and 43 every year, depending on the year. Like, 1 year is 41, 1 year is 42, the next year is 40. It's going to fluctuate. Well, why that works for the Chiefs is because they now know, okay, Patrick Mahomes counts $40 million on the cap. We now know how to structure the other contracts on the team. And because he took the deal now, it freed up money to sign Chris Jones, who is such a pivotal part of the defensive front. So, well, this Chiefs team could be a dynasty waiting to happen.
Do you agree with Tyreek Hill coming out and saying they can win 7 championships in a row? I want to hear this from you first, because I'm definitely disagreeing with it. Your thoughts?
In the next 20 years, yes. Can they become what the Patriots were? Without a doubt. Andy Reid isn't going anywhere. Patrick Mahomes obviously isn't going anywhere. And, well, all those guys are still young. Tyreek Hill, they have to pay him soon, too. Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce and Sammy Watkins, all those guys are still young or younger. So, 7 in a row, no. Personally, I don't think they're going to win it this year if the season concludes, but we'll save that for the NFL show. But can they win 7 in 12, 7 in 15? Definitely. Definitely. Maybe include back-to-back or a 3 out of 4 in that, too. I definitely think that they could do that, too. So, my last final thought actually goes to you, and I want to get your take on this. Woody Johnson had some comments the other day. Now, I forgot what the comments were, but I guess it was very controversial because it was over Twitter and sports radio, and then you're hearing things about he doesn't even care about the team. He's overseas on his thing. He needs to sell the team. His son's running the team. Whoever's running the team. Well, as the resident Jets fan on the show, if you saw the comment, heard the comment, whatever the case is, what's your take, A, on what was said, and, 2, what do you think Woody needs to do or should do with this team?
A, he's not selling the team. Bottom line, he's not. He's going to sit on it until the highest bidder comes to him, and when he's ready to go, look at the Wilpons and what they're doing right now with that. We'll save the Wilpons for another episode with what's going on. And B, you know, with everything that's been said, you know, this is a dark time being a Jet fan right now. I'll admit that. It is. The one lone bright spot throughout all this in the past 5 years, I'll go 5 years since the last time they were relevant since 2015 because of that 10-6 record, is Sam Darnold. That's it. That's the only bright spot, and he's the future of the franchise. Make no mistake about that. I love Sam Darnold. I think Sam Darnold is that guy. He's going to be that piece. I think he's going to win a Super Bowl here within the next 3 years for sure because of the fact that, A, his contract, he's still under a rookie contract. He's hungry. And, B, you look at the talent in place right now with the Jets. They could go out there and surprise a lot of people for sure. And that's just me saying that. And many Jet fans probably feel the same way how I feel. However, make no mistake, this is a dark time in the franchise's history because we got to see the 1-15 Jets in 1996. That was bad. We got to see, you know, Chad Pennington get hurt. A lot of, you know, high draft pick. They make it to the playoffs the following year in 04. Heartbreak with Doug Bryan. 05, Pennington goes down again. 06, they come back with Mangold and Ferguson. 07, Pennington goes down again. 08, they get Favre. They cut Pennington. Pennington comes back and bites them back in the ass, albeit with the Wildcat. 09, Sanchez and Ryan come in and do a thing with Eric Mangini, an Eric Mangini team. 2010, they take it all the way to their second straight AFC championship game, and then it's been losing upon losing upon losing each and every single year. The Jets cannot find a way, and this is, like I said, this is the darkest time out of everything that's going on right now, just because of the fact that, A, with Johnson in his comments, with Jamal Adams in his comments, with Sam Darnold going through the mono and seeing ghost comment, people want to keep on piling. And I haven't even mentioned the butt fumble at all throughout all this. And even though I mentioned the butt fumble earlier in the episode, not here in this segment, and Geno Smith with him getting his jaw broken, you know, it's just crazy. It's crazy to me how this franchise is still in a dark hole, but yet, you know, there's got to be light at the end of the tunnel, right? We'll see what happens as time goes on. I believe in Sam Darnold. This kid is the future of the franchise. Make no mistake about it. And if Woody does sell the team, great. Who is it going to be? I don't know. Is it Gary Vee? Is it some rich billionaire guy? I don't know. So, you know, the floor is all yours here, Sean. Me personally, if the league can go in and intervene with it because of the comments, so be it. It is what it is. I can't do anything about it. I'm mad and I'm upset because the fact that this league is mostly African-American, and with everything going on, there's a lot of change going on. There's a lot of things going on in the world. I don't get it. I really don't. But people love to shit pile on the Jets for sure. That's the one thing I know.
Woody has to wake up because, well, like you said, the league is mostly African-American. And, well, it's going to remain that way for a very long time. African-American boys, black boys, when they're young, they're given a football and a basketball. End of story. They're not given a hockey stick or a hockey puck. They're not given a baseball bat. A soccer ball, depending on what part of the world. They're definitely not given like rugby and shit. It's always football or basketball. Some of the greatest players in the history of the Jets were black. Two that stands over the top of my head. Curtis Martin and the guy that we spoke about during the show, Darrell Revis. Woody Johnson, you have to wake up. But, well, it's not only on Woody. Everybody has to wake up. Like, this is bigger than sports. When something trumps sports, people have to wake up. Well, I'll end this final thought on this. Roger Goodell, who was once considered the worst commissioner in sports, I think we agree, Rob Manfred clearly has that title.
Yeah.
But Roger Goodell needs to take a page out of Adam Silver's book. When the whole Sterling thing was going on with the Clippers, well, Adam Silver said, I got this. Hold my beer. And Sterling was out. Steve Ballmer bought the team. The Clippers have been this team. Well, this generation thinks the Clippers have always been great because since Steve Ballmer bought the team, they've been great. They haven't won yet. I think that's going to come, but they've been great. As we know, the Clippers are notoriously have been bad, but this generation thinks that they've been great. But I say that to say this. Commissioners of all sports, if somebody has money to buy the team, yes. However, they need to do a vetting process, an interview process as well. Because if you continue selling these teams or giving these teams to owners that don't care about the sport, they only care about the money, that team is going to continue to be bad, and they're not going to win. Well, I'm a Brooklyn Nets fan, as you know. Mikhail Prokhorov was only in it for the money. I knew that from day one. Brooklyn, it was hip, it was new. Jay-Z, Mikhail Prokhorov did not give a damn what happened on the court. That's why he said he wanted a championship in 5 years, because he knew, well, in 5 years, he was gone. Well, what happened in 5 years? He was gone. That's why Billy King made that idiotic trade. Even at the time, I thought it was too much, and it turned out to be bad. I say that to say this. Roger Goodell, well, I think two owners have to go. Woody Johnson has to go. Daniel Snyder has to go.
Oh, yeah.
There is no way in hell that a team is going to be named the Washington Football Team. Are you kidding me?
It's crazy.
And, well, it's clear that Woody Johnson's life focus is not the New York Jets. He's in Ireland doing his thing. He's doing whatever. Well, I'm not saying the owner has to only care about football. I'm not saying that. But you have to have an interest. Well, it's clear. Woody Johnson's son is clueless. Whatever his
name. Brother. It's not his son.
His brother. He's clueless too. Yeah. You have to bring in an owner that cares about the team, cares about the sport. Well, I guarantee you when Roger Goodell gets rid of Daniel Snyder, when he gets rid of Woody Johnson, and he vets two guys to own those teams, watch these two franchises start to become better. Well, I agree with you. If Gary Vee buys the Jets, holy smokes, you're going to see the Jets the popularity of the Jets is going to go big. Because, Will, who doesn't love a Gary V? Love Gary V.
That's right.
So if he buys the Jets.
We had on AJ.
We had on Peter Chuck on the show. We had on his brother, right? So it's just like the crazy thing. So, Will, hopefully Woody Johnson wakes up. But Roger Goodell needs to do a vetting process when somebody wants to buy the team. Because I'm tired of seeing these clueless owners don't care about the sport and the game. They only care about the money that comes from the internet. So we just see what happens there.
Well said.
Thank you,
Bill. Absolutely on that. Well said. On that note, for everybody here from the On the Board Sports team, from my co-host Sean Thomas, aka Sean T, coming to me from west of, I am your host, Will Tarucci, aka Will C, logging out. We'll talk to you guys soon. Peace out. Stay safe, everybody, and God bless you all. Love you.